This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. It's 7:06, Thursday, the 8th of July. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning. And joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C and Shazana Mokhtar. What's happening on the markets front, Philip?
A relatively good day in the US. The Dow was, and S&P 500 were up 0.3%. The Nasdaq was flat. Shanghai was up 0.7%, but the rest of Asian markets were down negative. Hang Seng was negative at 0.4%. Nikkei down 1%. STI down 1.5%. And back home, FBI KLCI was also down 0.01%.
So to help us make sense of where markets are going, we speak to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. Now, Tony, NASDAQ, S&P 500, Dow, all hit all-time highs. Does this make you actually nervous? Are markets looking a bit toppish?
I don't know about toppish today, but I guess what people have to be aware of is how big is the gain from here? So whether you're toppish now or toppish in, say, October, you know, you really have to be careful about the risk calculation right now and what your expectations are as things kind of turn over in the coming, say, quarter or two.
But time to switch for anything? What asset classes or markets look attractive now?
You know what? I think you've just got to be careful all around. I mean, you know, the expectations, valuations, levels of investment, profits, and so on, seem pretty stretched as we're, you know, in the middle of wage pressures, inflation pressures, and stressed consumers. So I think there seems to be more risk than opportunity out there. So I think we're in a pretty stretched market, and short of, let's say, more support from global governments, it's really hard to justify significantly higher valuations.
And everyone is, of course, looking at the Fed. Were last night's FOMC minutes what financial markets expected from the Fed, or do you think they could have given more clarity on their monetary policy?
Well, they can always give more clarity. I mean, there's always kind of reading the tea leaves with the Fed, but I think what really came out of it was kind of what was expected. It was pretty noncommittal. They kind of said tapering is coming, but they didn't say it's coming soon. There's no expectation of a rate hike soon. So it's really the kind of current status quo, with whatever that is, right? But it's kind of more of the same for more time. We don't really expect much to change in the Fed, you know, through 2022. Markets have sufficient headwinds as it is, as the world kind of re-normalizes. And so, you know, there's just, we don't expect much exciting happening. We didn't expect it this month, and we don't expect it for some time.
Is that why the 10-year bond yields in the U.S. Dropped to a four-month low, 1.3163, as I look at the Bloomberg at the moment? Do you think?
Well, it is. It could be. But it's also, you know, the current Fed chair may not be renominated by Biden. And if Jerome Powell is out, we're likely to see Lael Brainard come in, who is very much a monetary policy activist. So we could see a really active Fed, not a conservative, an extremely dovish Fed, if Lael Brainard comes in. So I think that could be part of the reason we're seeing expectations change in some of the bond markets.
Can we shift your attention over to oil? Because, as you know, the lack of consensus in OPEC Plus and with the failure to negotiate production quotas has really put pressure on oil prices again. Is this conflict going to introduce more short-term volatility in oil markets?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think until there's peace between the UAE and Saudi Arabia, of course, when I say peace, I'm just talking about in discussions, but until there's agreement between the UAE and Saudi Arabia, I think we are going to see volatility, because as the UAE creates a gap in expectations, other players like Russia and other folks can, you know, potentially violate the OPEC Plus agreement. And so, you know, where there is, you know, OPEC doesn't necessarily have a history of agreeing, you know, uniformly very often. And this OPEC Plus agreement has been one where they've really abided by it pretty well. And so OPEC is more fractious than it is kind of universal. And so I think we're going to see volatility for at least a short time. But I do think there is underlying strength in oil prices. We don't expect $100 oil anytime this year. Some people are calling for that. But we do see, you know, continued build in the strength of oil prices through the end of the year, marginal build.
All right. And looking at other indicators, I mean, the U.S. economy is booming, but the U.S. ISM non-manufacturing figure for June came in below market expectations. Could you give us some explanation on what were the reasons for that drop?
Yeah, the main reason really is unemployment or is employment. You know, companies have had to cope with fewer workers as these federal government subsidies have kept workers on the sidelines. Effectively, they've paid workers to sit at home more than they'd make in hourly jobs. And so small companies particularly have had to figure out a way to work without additional workers. So now a lot of those workers are coming off of the federal kind of stimulus packages. But a lot of these small and mid-sized companies have kind of learned how to cope without as many workers. So they're not trusting new workers until wages really come down. So it's really kind of putting an impediment in the path for especially small and mid-sized companies. And that's where there's a little bit of doubt in the ISM.
So are we seeing a new economic model then, Tony? You know, where there's a large, what we expect in terms of the full unemployment numbers will change?
It's a great question. I certainly hope not. Over the last year and a half, we've seen immense government intervention in markets globally. And, you know, was the stimulus too much? Was it misallocated? You know, we can argue that all day long. But the fact is, we've seen immense government stimulus. And it takes a long time for stimulus that large to wash through the system. So I think we're seeing the backside and the downside of stimulus. You know, we've seen things like inflation rates rise, you know, all this stuff over second quarter, but that's really just a year-on-year number. So we're seeing what's called base effects there. We're seeing the same in things like wages and impacts on markets from government activity. So Q2 was a huge anomaly for markets and for government because of what happened globally with COVID in Q2 of 2020. As we kind of come back to a relatively normal-ish market, maybe by Q4, you know, we'll start to see more normal readings across wages, across, say, profits, across other things. So there really is, it's a slow build. And as more of that government stimulus gets pulled out of the market, or at least slows down, we'll start to see things normalize. So I'll say, I don't necessarily think it's a new model unless the government insists on continuing to intervene and subsidize markets.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence, giving us his views on equity markets and even the fixed income market. But what was really surprising is that he thinks Jerome Powell will be replaced as the Fed chair. I was like, this is news to me. I thought he was doing an okay job. And usually I would kind of imagine Joe Biden kind of leaving them to do their thing.
That's right. I mean, I wouldn't expect Joe Biden to have placed his political perspectives in the appointment of the Fed chair. But I think there are a lot of key decisions that has to be made. And that whole link between the tapering of his asset purchases and adjustment of interest rates, how do you have that delicate balancing act will be very critical, I think.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if you remember, I mean, Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell work well together, right? Yeah. And Janet Yellen is his appointment. Mm. So I'm a little bit surprised by this news. But other news that, you know, kind of, you know, I was like kind of focused on was also the fact that he thinks at the end of the day, market upside is limited. So I think all of us as investors have to adjust our expectations in terms of the returns. Mm-hmm. Because if you talk about the rally from March 2020 lows to now, it's about 90%. And that's staggering.
And Tony is alluding to the fact that the stimulus was too broad, not targeted enough. I think which basically resulted in a wash of cash I think, creating a lot of frothy markets. And this is the challenge now.
So how does the bubble kind of burst, right, without creating chaos?
Absolutely.
You kind of want to deflate it, but not so much.
And can I also draw your attention to something else that Tony said that caught my eye? The fact that he thinks oil isn't going to hit $100 per barrel. We're actually going to be discussing more on oil later at 7:30 after the bulletin with Saleh Yilmaz of Bloomberg Intelligence. So stay tuned for that conversation on what the oil market is going to look like.
Now, very quickly, other news that's catching our eye is that the Wall Street Journal reports that dozens of states have actually filed an antitrust lawsuit against Alphabet's Google, alleging that the company illegally abused its power over developers that distribute apps through the Google Play Store on mobile devices.
The antitrust suit in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California was led by Utah and signed on to by New York, California, and other states. Now, the case opens a new front in the regulatory battle against Google. Over the past year, the company has faced lawsuits over its dominance on search advertising and its sprawly ad tech business.
What is interesting, it seems like big tech comes under attack, not just in China, which we have seen with the likes of DiDi and, you know, Alipay, and financial, but we also see that in the US. I wonder whether this is going to be repeated or we're going to see more companies come under the dragnet of regulators.
That's right. And this case is really similar to the antitrust case that was filed by Epic Games against the Apple App Store. So you can see that a lot of different stakeholders are trying to find a way to kind of break into that wall that big tech has in this
space. Monopoly? Well, they don't like to use that word, right?
The problem here is privacy settings for Google. And Google is trying to create this new framework to reduce this privacy settings, but this will affect its search advertising revenue.
And can I just say that apart from this case, there's been another lawsuit that's been filed against big tech. We've got the former president, Donald Trump. He's filing a lawsuit against
Google,
Facebook, and Twitter for censorship.
Well, censorship. Okay, that would be fake news.
Well, there was the Facebook Oversight Board, which was independently, and they decided not to support Donald Trump for a year.
Okay, we'll be watching this big tech space very closely. But up next, we'll dive into the headlines in the papers and the local portals. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.